Yo, have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? When I was trying to get this podcast off the ground, I had a lot of questions. How do I record an episode? How do I get my show onto all the apps that people like to listen to? How do you make money? The answer was pretty simple for me. I started using Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. And best of all, it's 100% free and super easy to use. And now, Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise in your podcast. So that means you can get paid immediately, like right away. In fact, that's what I'm doing right now by reading you this ad. It's super simple. So if you always wanted to start a podcast, let's start now. Go to anchor.fm/start to join me and the diverse community of producers using Anchor. Again, that's anchor.fm/start. See you soon. What's up, everyone? And welcome back to the Stretch 4 podcast. I'm your host, Peter Tran, and on the line, I got my partner in the pick and pop, my man, Josh Cohen, calling in. How you doing, man?
Knocking down threes all day.
Oh, baby. Just like the Raptors?
Well, last night anyway, not the rest of the season.
Oh, shots fired. So we're about a quarter of the season in. We're roughly around 20, 22 games so far, for depending on the team, obviously. And I think we're at that point where we can sort of figure out where teams are going to end up, right?
Yeah, except in the Western Conference where every team is 9-8 or 10-9.
All right, I want to start off with the Raptors. Obviously, we saw that crazy comeback that they had against the Grizzlies where they were down 17 in like the earlier mid-third quarter. And somehow ended up winning that game. Like, they just caught on fire. It was pretty impressive.
Yeah, and they changed the defense up in the third quarter too, because in the first half, they were just allowing whoever the ball handler was get in the lane at ease and hit those little floater shots or mid-range shots without a contest. And then in the second half, they changed up their defense to have the big man sort of shoot up and show on the pick and roll and then head back to Gasol as quickly as possible. And then Fred VanVleet did a great job on Mike Conley in the fourth quarter especially. But the zone defense in the third quarter was a nice touch. I was not expecting that, and Memphis couldn't score against it. And they cut the lead from 17-5 playing that zone defense, and then they started playing with more energy on the defensive end and then also changing up their defense in the fourth quarter, too.
I think we all just figured out how to beat Memphis. Make them shoot, because their team is pretty trash on the outside. Other than, like, Gasol and Conley, there's not anyone who is actually a good shooter on that team anymore, right? Maybe Garrett Temple?
Yeah, Garrett Temple's been good this year, but he's not a guy that shoots a high quantity of threes. He's shooting 40% from the three-point line, but he's not taking a lot. He's not a guy that's going to, gun, obviously, and shoot you out of games or shoot you into games, so.
Yeah, that team is rough offensively. Whenever you stop Conley, the whole offense sort of just bogs down. Shelvin Mack isn't going to be a guy who's going to drive and dish to every time. He's obviously just not that skilled. And then you sort of just stuck. You're relying on Marc Gasol to like carry the team otherwise.
Yeah, once they took Gasol out of the equation in the fourth quarter, Conley had to do everything, and they were just swarming him. And obviously, the other guys on the team, they didn't want the ball. Whenever Conley got rid of it early on the pick and roll when Toronto was high hedging, they give it up to Kyle Anderson in the corner. He just passed it right back to Conley, and they just got laid in the shot clock. But that's also a testament to Toronto's defense as well. It just shows that Toronto can be an extremely versatile defensive team. And they have so many guys off the bench that can play with their starters in different lineups and crunch time and adjust to any matchup necessary, which is going to be big if, Steph Curry's back next game, so we'll hopefully be able to see that.
We don't have any news on that yet, right?
Steve Kerr said yesterday he's hopeful to get Steph back on Saturday, but Steph said he wants to play on Thursday, so we'll see.
Ooh. He's going to show up for his old man?
I hope so. I mean, Steph grew up, playing, his early days in Toronto, and he was like an 8-10-year-old shooting threes on the Toronto court with Vince Carter. So hopefully he shows up for the game because it's on TNT at 8 o'clock, and Raptors Nation is obviously very excited to see Toronto just pummel Golden State into oblivion.
Are you excited to listen to Reggie Miller on the call?
Oh, I'm not listening to Reggie. That's not happening.
Oh, my bad.
I'd rather listen to it on mute.
It might be your man Chris Webber instead.
Rather play Static than listen to Reggie.
That's harsh, man. Come
Reggie's
on
the worst.
He's pretty bad, but like, yeah, the whole TNT
crew. No, he's definitely awful. The worst. He's by far the worst.
The TNT crews are pretty awful this year. Between those two and then Marv Albert still not knowing anyone's name. Basically, you're reliant on Kevin Harlan.
Well, at least they got rid of players only, moved that to NBA TV, because that's the worst broadcast in sports right now.
Did they have players only? I thought that was always an NBA TV thing.
No, it was TNT last year. They had like Nate Robinson and a bunch of other players on the broadcast.
That was awful. It's also on Mondays now instead of Tuesdays, eh? I don't know if you noticed, but...
Yeah, I think so. But yeah, Nate Robinson's second to Reggie Miller in terms of announcing.
Yeah, well, he should just be in the big three. Don't do anything else, Nate.
All Nate Robinson says is, yeah, you can't give him that. You can't give him that. It's like, come on, man.
That's all they do, though. They're players. It's like, have you listened to Greg Anthony do this? He's awful.
I know.
I can't believe we're breaking down color and commentating teams. But Greg Anthony...
Let's get back to things that are good. Let's talk about the Raptors again.
Please, take it away if you want to talk about the Raptors.
So, the Raptors thus far this season have had the 26th strength and schedule so far this year in terms of, you know, who they've played so far. They've played teams at a percentage of 47% winning percentage thus far this season, and that just means that so far, you know, they haven't played the best teams, obviously, but they are 18-4, so they've beat who's in front of them, and they've lost a couple of close games that they should have won. But coming up in the next 11 games, they have Golden State at home, Cleveland on the road should be a W, obviously, but then they have Denver and Philadelphia at home, at Brooklyn, which is going to be a tough game after playing Philadelphia, against Milwaukee, at the Clippers, at Golden State, at Denver, at Portland, and then against Indiana at home. So they got the Murderer's Row coming up, so it's going to be a big test in the next 11 games to see what this team really is.
Out of those 11, they're playing the Eastern Conference champions twice. Okay, just to remind everybody that they got to go through Cleveland first.
Yeah, the Golden State game doesn't even matter. It's all about the Cleveland game.
It's a Cleveland game on a Saturday night. That actually matters.
Yeah, we got to beat the Cleveland Tristan Thompsons.
Exactly. Now you understand how important these games are. But it actually really helps the Raptors in that point that they had such an easier schedule to start off. Just because the team was sort of, you know, starting off with a new coaching staff, having obviously a new superstar and new role player with Danny Green coming in. It made it a lot easier for the team to sort of integrate with each other. You know what I mean? Have a couple of easy schedules, a couple of easy games, and slowly just get the guys to work together.
The Raptors, you know, strength of schedule, obviously, as you said, it hasn't been great, but, you know, building that chemistry is going to be big come, you know, when they play these, you know, better teams in the Western Conference, and obviously Milwaukee and Philadelphia, too, with them, you know, rolling. It's just going to be a big test for them the next 10 games to see what, you know, defensively especially, like Toronto's been pretty lackadaisical throughout some games, despite having very good defensive lineups in the game. And I think hopefully with, you know, they're showing in Memphis yesterday, especially in the second half where they just put the clamps on the Grizzlies, they'll be able to keep this up for longer periods of time throughout the game and build up their defense, because Nick Nurse said they've only installed like 70% of their defense so far. So hopefully that's something that they can improve on over the course of the season. You know, even despite that, they're still seventh in defense, so I think that's going to improve as time goes on.
Is Coach Nurse pulling a Ty Lue and saving the goodies for the playoffs?
He should be. Save at least 10% of that defense for the playoffs and don't show, you know, your biggest weapons.
But the biggest weapon is Kawhi. I think he's already shown his biggest weapon. You know what I'm saying?
No, I don't think so. I think you're going to see in the playoffs that, you know, Siakam and Kawhi are going to be on team's, you know, best offensive big men. I think that's one thing that they haven't shown yet, where they keep having Serge play guys like Marc Gasol who can take you to the outside. But I think in the playoffs, there's going to be a lot more switching and a lot more situations where they front the post against players like Embiid in the playoffs and even Giannis.
Going to really rely on that injury pass being good then. If you're going to front with Siakam every time, like, you're going to need a good entry pass for the opposing team. And then on the defensive end, you need a solid rotation. Like, someone's got to be ready to jump on that help instantly.
Yeah, and Toronto has the guys to swarm. So even if they get that pass through, they're going to have, you know, backside defense and guys that are able to rotate under control, which is something that I think Danny Green is probably one of the best at in the NBA so far. He's been a big surprise on defense especially, but even offense, he's been pretty consistent.
Is it a surprise? Come on, man. We were saying how good Danny Green was going to be on this team, like literally on the day of the trade.
Well, we were hoping that he would be like 2 years ago, Danny Green in the finals. But, you know, I mean, the last 2 years, he hasn't really shown a lot. Defensively, he's been pretty good. But offensively, he's been bad the last 2 years. And luckily, with Toronto's motion offense and getting, you know, a bunch of different guys involved, he's been able to get those transition three-pointers up again.
Yeah, they're actually moving the rock. And he's healthy. If he was actually that hurt last year, and Kawhi was hurt last year, I don't know about the San Antonio training staff anymore. But if Danny Green is healthy, man, he can still move. And he can still shoot pretty well. Like, you don't lose your shot that easily. You know what I mean?
No, I think this year has shown that the last couple of years just were a product of San Antonio's ISO-heavy system.
ISO.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Toronto's been very good in transition. I mean, yesterday they had, I think, 29 transition points against the Grizzlies, who are a very good defensive team. So they pick up the pace. So they're playing at their own pace, and they're playing their game so far.
You know who else is playing their own game? These feisty-ass LA Clippers, man. Can you believe that they're first in the West right now? Second in the league? Or a third in the league? Sorry, behind the Bucks. But that's crazy. How the hell, like, this team is literally reliant on Tobias Harris, Danilo Gallinari, Montrezl Harrell, and the rookie Shai Alexander-Gilgeous. Gilgeous?
You almost got it.
Whatever.
Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
There you go. Thank you. Those four guys are literally carrying this team. Oh, and former sixth man Lou Will, who just keeps hitting shots in the fourth quarter and in overtime. Simple. What the hell?
Yeah, simple formula for W's, right? But, you know, I've said before that I don't think this is going to last. And in looking at the numbers today, if they don't have any major injuries, it might last because they've had the third toughest schedule so far, which is like the most surprising thing that I saw thus far looking through the stats. And in terms of what they've done well so far this year, in terms of their opponent percentage of points from three-pointers, they've improved to fifth in the NBA, only allowing 26.5 points a game, which is obviously up from last year where they allowed 30-plus points per game from the three-point line. So that's one area where they've really, you know, honed down and made sure that they're trying to get teams to sort of funnel into the paint. And Montrezl Harrell has shown a big improvement in this, his defensive efficiency and blocking shots and getting steals, just being active out there. They're just a team that tries really hard night to night, and they have 12 guys that can play, so if one guy's not playing well, they just plug the next guy in. They're sort of like the modern-day Grizzlies from back in 2005 when they had, you know, Jay Will, Mike Miller, Shane Battey, all those guys, and they had, like, a really good bench, I think.
That was a great team to watch.
Yeah, I mean, the Clippers, they score a lot of points, so they are pretty fun to watch. They score 116 points a game, too, and they get it from, like I said, just a different guy every night. I mean, Tobias Harris has been their most consistent player with Harrell right behind him. And Gallinari's there most nights, but then obviously you have Lou Williams showing up in clutch time. Gilgeous Alexander is now starting over Beverly. So they've just got it from different spots, and they just find ways to win games.
Yeah, they actually move the ball a lot, too. Yeah, and if you look at actual player percentages, Danilo Gallinari is shooting 46% from the three on five attempts. Tobias Harris is shooting 43% on 4.7 attempts. Like, they're chucking from three. And they're actually hitting them. You know what I mean? Like, it's pretty impressive.
And then they're playing. Go ahead. They're playing the modern game. And, you know, I think those percentages are going to start dipping as the season goes along. And the comparison I'd also make with them, not to a previous team, but to an actual game itself, I see their team as, like, as a Jenga board. As like when you're building up Jenga pieces and you're building it all the way to the top, right? You got this really tall stack of Jenga, which is very impressive. You built it up all that way, but then you take the one piece out right in the middle or near the bottom and everything just falls apart. And I just think that eventually you're going to have that Gallinari injury where he's out 2 to 3 weeks and then everything's going to fall apart because you can't replace him in the starting lineup with a guy like Mike Scott. So it's only a matter of time where they finally have an injury, and it's going to negatively impact them, obviously, going forward. So I know that's a crazy thing to say with in terms of, like, you know, seeing how they played thus far and, you know, most teams being one injury away from just collapsing in the standings. But I think they're a team that's really holding on to, you know, not something special right now, but I think that they've had a great start to the season, but again, they're pretty close to collapsing as well, I think, after, you know, having one major injury to any of those two or three guys. Even Harrell, if he's out, they have no big man that can play 25 to 30 minutes a game. Like, he's playing that amount of minutes because Gortat can't play that, right?
So, which we all knew going into the season.
Yeah.
Let's be real. We knew that Gortat wasn't going to perform. We knew that everything would fall on Harrell, and then Boban has, you know, obviously we've all seen the memes or highlights of Boban just standing there and dunking. So he's had his little time to shine. I don't know if they're solely reliant on Danilo the way that you're describing it. You know what I mean? Like, if he drops out, I think that they end up just going really small and having Gildas Alexander sort of move to, like, the 2-3 along with Avery Bradley and then Patrick Beverley coming on, or Lou Will at the end of the game.
No, but Gallinari is a big piece to their defense as well. He's able to switch on to guys, which has helped them in the fourth quarter. And I think if they just lose him, like, you're losing so much versatility on both sides of the ball on the wing. So I don't know. I think I love that their team has started off this well, obviously, and they are fun to watch, but again, I don't really see this lasting over the course of the season, despite them having depth, but I just don't see it. I think that they might make the playoffs in, you know, a 7-8 type of seed, but there's no way they're going to stay at the top of the standings.
Oh, hell no.
I'll be shocked.
Hell no. I agree. 7-8 tops. There's no way they get past like a 6 seed, because you're right. Throughout his whole career, like, as a Nuggets fan, I've seen it firsthand. Every year, I was always hyped up over Danilo Gallinari. Going into the season, he was always, like, you know, that guy who can do everything that a superstar can do in terms of his offensive talent, but could just never put it all together because he got hurt. And it happened year after year after year, no matter what. And so you're right. The injury is going to come sooner or later, but for right now, for what we've seen over the first 20 games, they are killing it. If this continues, we might actually see Doc getting a lot of praise as like a Coach of the Year candidate.
Yeah, I think as of right now, through 20 games, he probably is the Coach of the Year just based on their performance. But again, it's an 82-game season, and Danilo Gallinari has only played 70-plus games twice in a span of 10 years. So it's only a matter of time,
damn,
unfortunately.
Really?
Yeah. He played 71 games in 2012, and then he played 81 games in his second year in New York.
Jesus.
So it's just hard to see this lasting.
Man, you're a buzzkill.
Sorry.
God damn. All right, well, let's move on to something happier, I guess. So, like I said, we're about a quarter into the season, and obviously at this point, you can sort of have an indication of where teams will end up, or if not end up, how they'll perform together. You know what I mean? Not everyone is going to pull together a miraculous streak like Utah did last year, but you'll also see teams sort of establish who they are. So what have you seen so far this year that you can say is like, you know, I've seen it, I like it, I'm going to keep seeing this throughout the whole year?
The first team that comes to mind is the Milwaukee Bucks. They've gotten off to a really hot start. Unfortunately, in the last 13 games, they're 7-6 in November. But their offense is still first in overall efficiency. But they're just going to be a really good regular season team just based with the way they play. They play the modern game almost to the level of what Houston's been doing the last couple seasons, and that they're shooting a ton of threes. But the one thing that has changed for them, which has been surprising so far, is the rebounding rate. They're first in defensive rebounds in the NBA, which is shocking when you have Brook Lopez as your center, who averages maybe 3 or 4 rebounds a game. But for some reason, every team that he's on has a really good defensive rebounding rate. Maybe it's just because him and Robin are just so adept at boxing guys out and letting their teammates get the rebounds.
Yes.
But the Lakers were 12th last year, despite having not many good defensive rebounders on that team. And again, they're first in rate for defensive rebounding, which is shocking so far, but they just have a bunch of guys that shoot a ton of threes, and they have some depth off the bench. So I think they're going to be a really good regular season team, but I think come playoff time, I'm not sure if I would take them over a team like Philadelphia, where they would have 3 of the 4 best players in the series.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with the Bucks is that their leading superstar, obviously Giannis, doesn't shoot any threes. You know what I mean? Like, he sort of has that, not to the level of Ben Simmons, obviously, but that hesitancy when he's on the perimeter. So what does he do? He just takes like one dribble and then just attacks the rim. Or he attacks the rim and then penetrates. But it works. Because everyone, literally everyone else on the team, their only assignment on offense is to shoot the ball from three. So you have the perfect spread offense where you have one guy who's obviously a freak athlete just attacking the rim and slashing and then just kicking the ball and then they just swing it around. It's absolutely perfect for this kind of system and for this kind of new NBA where everyone just wants to chuck threes. Obviously, they're like among the league leaders in attempts, and it makes total sense because every lineup that they have has at least four guys to shoot.
Yeah, Giannis has sort of turned into early years LeBron, where you just surround him with a bunch of shooters and just let him get in the paint. And if teams double off or, you know, hedge and bring guys over, you just kick it out to the three-point line. But the main difference between the LeBron teams in the early, or I guess late 2000s and this team is Milwaukee has some guys that can attack closeouts and get to the rim. And, you know, Chris Middleton's been really good this year so far. And the one surprise for most people is that Eric Bledsoe's returned to form. And he's playing really good defense this year. He's trying really hard, but maybe it's not so much a surprise when you look at his contract situation and you see that his contract is expiring and he's up for a new deal. So that could be it as well.
You know, he's being praised as someone who's like shooting the ball really well. Do you know what his three point percentage is this year, Bledsoe?
I'll say it's below average at like 33.
Oh, it's slightly higher, 35.5.
Yeah, it's almost average.
Like, he's shooting a lot of them, but it's not like he's actually good at shooting them. You know what I mean? He's just getting them up there, which is indicative of how the NBA is now, where you just need someone to shoot, no matter how good they are. That's why Tony Snell still has a job, because he can just shoot.
Yeah, and on that note, John Henson was taking, I think, two or three threes a game as well, and he didn't shoot any threes before this season.
He's attempting 2.2 a game. How insane. John Henson, man. Yeah, this team is just purely chucking.
And he's hitting up at a league average rate as well. He's shooting 36% from the three-point line. It's unfortunate he got injured a couple of weeks ago, and he's going to be out until March or April now, the wrist injury. But with him putting them up, like, he's shot a decent percentage, surprisingly. He's worked pretty hard on, you know, modernizing his game as well.
Yeah, kind of like your boy Jonas. Almost like your boy Jonas.
I'm hoping that Jonas soon turns into Brook Lopez and just shoots like 8 threes a game.
Yo, during that Memphis game, there was one play where he actually just shot the ball in rhythm. It wasn't like, you know how he usually trails and shoots it or just gets like an open look in the corner? This was like mid-swings, and then he just, instead of pump faking it, he just shot the ball from the wing. And I was like, damn, he didn't pump fake. I could have sworn he was going to pump fake it and get Gasol in the air, you know, try to like drive past him or pass.
Get Gasol in the air. Gasol's not jumping at that.
Yeah, you're right. My bad. Maybe that's why he just shot it.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, my bad. My bad.
Yeah, I mean, getting back to Brook, though, he's shooting 37% from three this year, which is really good for a big guy especially. And he's shooting 7 threes a game. That's crazy.
You saw that game against Denver where he was just chucking, right? He was like 3 feet away from the line and just let it launch. I think he had like 8 threes in a game.
Is it considered chucking, though, if you're hitting them?
Yeah. I don't care. Are you saying
Steph isn't a flamethrower in that game?
Yeah, of course. But, you know, just because you shoot a lot doesn't mean... Or just because you're hitting a lot doesn't mean you're not a chucker. Sometimes chuckers can be good.
I think we need a new term for guys that shoot a lot of threes but are hitting them at a high rate.
Good shooters, yeah.
No, I mean a cooler term.
Oh, flamethrowers, yeah.
Yeah, that'd be great. I mean, Kevin Harlan introduced that when Kobe got hot way back when. This guy is a flamethrower, you know?
Oh, man, I gotta find that clip now. Thanks a lot. Killing me here, man.
Here's Kobe. Way outside. Oh, how about that shot? Kobe Bryant puts it up, beauty. From way outside.
All right, I want to move on because you know where I gotta take this. We're going out to Denver, man. My guys are killing it. They obviously started off the year really hot. Had a little bit of a cold streak. Went like, I think 1-5, 1-6. You know, they were on the road. They were tired, feeling themselves a bit. And then they're right back. They're right back. Had a solid week. I think they are sitting at, let me check here, 14-7, my friend, third in the West. They're coming together. Yeah.
They've had some ebbs and flows thus far this season, and, you know, yesterday, even without Gary Harris, they just pummeled the Lakers.
It's the Lakers, though.
Yeah, I mean, it's not saying much, but the Lakers are only 2.5 games out of first place, so, like every other team in the West, though, I guess.
Exactly.
But yeah, the one thing with Denver that's surprised me thus far this year is they started out as the first, the best defensive team in the NBA through, I think, 5 or 7 games, and thus far through 21 games, they're third. So they are maintaining, you know, very good defensive efficiency, despite being a really good offensive team, which you don't really see that often. Yeah. And they've been a better defense than they have thus far versus being a better offense. So it's been surprising how their team has changed over the course of one season.
And they're beating up on teams that they're supposed to beat up on. You know what I mean? Like we said with the Raptors, you only have – the schedule is made for you. You're only playing against teams that you're set up to. You can't control who you play against. And they're beating the teams that they're supposed to beat. And then the teams that they're not supposed to beat, they're either putting up a good fight and winning, or they're just putting up a good fight, and then, you know, those are the breaks. But it's at least consistent now. Other than, obviously, Nikola Jokic, like, scoring, like, 5 points or 7 points in, like, 3 or 4 consecutive games. Aside from that, this team is, like, pretty solidly, you know, you're gonna see Jamal Murray come out every night and chuck away, as always. Will Barton hasn't played since the second game of the season, so it's hard to tell where he's at. Gary Harris obviously just got hurt, but he's turned into one of the better two-way players in the game. And Paul Millsap might actually have ups again. It's weird.
Yeah, Millsap's played very well over the course of the last 2 weeks. The one odd thing, though, with Denver is it seems like whenever Millsap plays well, Jokic doesn't. So that's a problem.
Yeah, they don't mesh very well. From the looks of it so far, at least. But even then, as long as they're winning, I don't really care.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, come playoff time, you want Jokic to be the guy. And, you know, last year and the last couple of games of the season, Millsap told him, like, you need to be the guy. I'm going to take a step back and just be a role player. And the last few games, Millsap has stepped it up, which is a credit to him, obviously. But yeah. Jokic does seem tentative at times throughout games, which is really, you know, something that's been consistent over the course of his career, which hopefully won't continue.
Definitely in his personality type. He's too chill of a dude. And it kind of helps because he's more of like a pass-first big, if that makes any sense. He's leading the team in assists, by far.
So yeah, he's an amazing playmaker. Yeah. Just, you know, sometimes helps. When he passes up those shots in the lane or he passes up post-ups against smaller guys, you're just like, what are you doing, man? Like, just take it to the rim.
Nah, just keep doing your thing, Nikola. Don't listen to these haters. I will not have this hate on my podcast.
It's also been surprising, too. Like, Juancho Hernangómez has been starting the last 10 games. And despite him starting, you would think that he's not a very good defensive player. And him and Jokic being in the same starting lineup seems like a recipe for disaster. And yet they've been able to maintain this defensive energy and, you know, being able to rotate out to three-point shooters. Juancho has been very good this year. And I thought that they would continue to start Torrey Craig. But he's been good off the bench as well. It just like seems like every guy that they're bringing in now, even guys like Malik Beasley and Murray off the bench too, they've just produced at a high level in their limited minutes, and the parts are just fitting. Like their lineups just work. Whereas you look at a team like Boston with their starting five and even the guys coming off the bench replacing those guys, they just haven't found consistent lineups that they can go to get consistent production. You know, it just seems like this year everything's coming together in a good way for Denver.
Hell yeah.
One thing though with Denver, I think once Isaiah Thomas comes back, they gotta give a decision.
Nah, they can just cut him right now. He's on a minimum contract. Who cares? Monte Morris is much better off the bench for this team than Isaiah would be.
True, but Isaiah has, you know, clout around the NBA, so he's gonna start complaining too if he doesn't get the minutes. But as you said, if that happens, they could just cut him, but it's just hard to see that happening.
Who cares? At this point, if you're Isaiah Thomas, you know that you need to contribute in a positive manner, right? You can't be that guy who's going to come in with his chest held high, just being like, yo, this is my squad. Because you're a veteran player coming off the bench, right? On a minimum contract. You've been chased out of your last two teams. I wouldn't say he was chased out of Boston, but he was definitely chased out of Cleveland and out of LA. My man, you do not have a foot to stand on.
Yeah, this situation sounds a lot like the Carmelo Anthony situation when you describe it that way. It does.
Nah, Carmelo's more established, though.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But, I mean, like, over the course of the last couple of seasons, both guys have struggled in more limited roles instead of being the guy on their team or even the second guy. And they just haven't been able to not be a star when they're on the court. They just can't, you know, just be spot-up shooters or guys that attack closeouts and play a little more limited role with the ball, not having the ball in their hands for more than 2 or 3 seconds of possession, you know?
Yeah, I think the difference between the two is Isaiah's is more based out of physical limitations. You know what I mean? Like, after he got hurt, like, he wasn't as explosive as he once was. And for being such a small guy, he needs to be able to attack the rim and have those sudden stops or, like, jerky motions. Whereas Melo is sort of just like, I don't know what happened to Melo. It just sucks to see.
Yeah, and as I predicted last podcast, he's going to be out of the league going forward. He is not going to sign anywhere this year.
No, they still haven't cut him yet, officially.
No, they're trying to work out a trade or find a spot for him before they cut him, but
yeah,
it's inevitable, and hopefully he, you know, goes to a, you know, one of the teams in China, maybe go to Yao Ming's team and puts up 40 a game and gets a statue put up like Marbury.
No, let's get him to the Lakers.
Oh, God.
Everyone to the Lakers. Let's go, man. They need help.
Yeah, maybe the Lakers can sign Isaiah Thomas, too, once Denver cuts him.
Perfect. Send them all there.
Get all the malcontents out there.
Yeah, it's your favorite. All right, who do you got next?
Well, I guess speaking of malcontents, Markelle Fultz.
Oh, man.
We're going to Philadelphia now. I mean, that situation. We'll talk about that in a different podcast, but I just want to talk about Philadelphia in general, just as a team.
I'm tired of talking about Markelle, man.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to come back this season either, but that's a whole other podcast. So with Philadelphia, when I was, you know, talking about Milwaukee, I just see them as more of a more complete team in the playoffs, because you have three really good players that can take, you know, teams off the dribble, obviously. But so far this season, the one stat that stood out to me with the 76ers is their overall team net rating is at zero. So they're giving up 114 points a game, and they're scoring 114 points a game. And that's some, like, when you add those two things together, you should have a record of around 500 or just above 500. And yet I think they're like 5 or 6 games over 500 because they keep winning these close games now with Jimmy Butler in the fold. So I don't think they're as good as they've shown thus far this regular season. But at the same time, come playoff time, you know the Stars win, obviously. So you have those three guys. And if they're able to get, you know, one or two more shooters at the deadline or, you know, during buyout season like they did last year with Ilyasova and Marco Bellinelli, this team could be maybe the second best team in the East if they're able to add maybe one or two more pieces.
Do you still hate the trade for them?
I'm still not a fan of the trade, but at the same time, I see where they're coming from, obviously, and they're going to be a really good team as long as they get a couple more pieces. But if the team stays as is, they're not able to add two reliable shooters to this lineup. I just think that the trade may just be for nothing because, again, Butler, going forward, Butler, I don't think, is the best piece to have on a 5-year max contract. So that's where my gripe was with the 76ers looking forward. But for this year specifically, with the East as it is, I think that they could be the second or maybe the first, you know, team in the NBA, or team in the East, depending on how injuries go throughout the season, obviously, and if they're able to acquire one or two good players.
Yeah, I think, well, coming out of last year, they had such a huge, like, playoff showing, right? So it only made sense that they'd wanted to show up this year and be even bigger and better. And one of the guys that, oddly enough, hasn't gotten as much praise as I thought he would is Joel Embiid. My man is averaging 28.1 points and 13 boards. He's completely dominating every defender that he goes against. And you know what I mean? Like, he doesn't get that much shine like you would think he does. Like, he's having an incredible year. Probably the best big man in the league right now. Or having the best year of any big man in the league, right?
Yeah, and he played an extremely efficient game against Anthony Davis, too. He won that matchup.
Easily.
And yeah, and easily. He dominated him in that game. And, yeah, he's been the best big man in the NBA thus far this season. I'd probably still take Davis over him overall. But,
would you? As you said, he's putting up... If they're both healthy, I might actually take Embiid over Davis.
Yeah, I mean, it's close, obviously. Yeah. But I just think Davis is more versatile, especially in the playoffs when you need to be able to switch out on guards. I think that Embiid's showing a propensity to do that, but he's not as quick as Davis is.
That's true.
I don't think he's as, I guess, multidimensional in defense.
That's true. I think his offensive game is much more, not just finesse-based, but it's more polished. You know what I mean? Like, he's got those moves. He's got, like, that Hakeem Olajuwon smoothness when he's taking the ball inside. And he actually pounds guys inside, which I love to see. Like, you know,
love
you know
to see what, guys pounded inside, huh?
Yeah, insert Dwight Howard Joe.
I was holding back.
Yeah, man, he's got the moves. He actually takes guys inside. And it's something that is so rarely seen. I actually hadn't heard anything about Embiid this year until this week when other, like, you know, when other media account or other media have talked about, you know, their top guys of the season so far and blah, blah, blah. And that's when you finally hear praise about this guy. But he's having an MVP caliber start to the year.
True. On the opposite side of the spectrum, though, he's playing 35 minutes a game and he hasn't started a game this year yet. So that's also pause for concern for 76ers fans going forward. Is he going to be able to play 70 plus games when he's playing, you know, 35 minutes a game and putting this much wear and tear in his body with his production level and his effort level too? I mean, his defense has been amazing thus far this year as well. But I think with Philadelphia, again, just going back to their bench, like, they have nobody coming off the bench. They have guys that have produced in the last few games from the three-point line, but again, you're going to rely on Landry Shamet and Mike Muscala to hit threes for you in the playoffs when the pace slows down and teams start switching more often? I don't think so.
But it's Landry Shamet. He's actually been pretty good. As a rookie, he's shooting a really good three-point percentage. Like, he's close to, like, around 500 or so. No, I lied. He's at 40%.
That's good, though, for a rookie especially. I mean, we're talking about Garrett Temple before with, you know, him being a guy that doesn't really take them that often unless he's wide open. But Shamet just throws them up. It doesn't really matter. He's just going to catch the ball and shoot it, which helps their offense, obviously, with so many non-shooters at times anyway, with McConnell, Fultz when he was in the lineup, Ben Simmons. So you need guys like that are just have the mentality that when they come in, they just have to shoot the ball like, you know, J.J. Redick has thus far this year as well.
Do you think they're looking to get rid of Fultz? Like, realistically exploring options here? Because I would be if I were them.
Yeah, I mean, with the reports coming out of Fultz's camp as well, with, you know, his agent / lawyer indicating that, you know, Fultz wants, you know, to be on a new team, then he denied it afterwards after Woj reported it. That whole story is just weird.
Oh, my God.
I think that, you know, Fultz needs to maybe go to India and find somebody that can heal him. Because there's something wrong with that dude. It's not
related. He needs a healer, man. Stretch. Jesus. That was a crazy stretch of something he'd need to do. Not just go to Germany like everyone else. Come on.
He needs to go somewhere way the hell out, get his mind right, maybe do some meditation. I don't know, man. There's something wrong with his head, man. There's something there.
Yeah, I feel you. I hope he gets better, but at the same time, I really want to see him get shipped out. Because he's just, I'm not feeling it. It doesn't look like he even cares. Scared of having the ball in his hands. Doesn't play that good of defense right now. Like,
I mean, he just needs a new beginning, because McConnell fits better in the second unit anyway.
He needs to go somewhere where he can actually develop. And not just have all the the light shined on him. You know what I mean? Send him to Phoenix. Markel Fultz for Trevor Ariza.
Yeah, I mean, that could definitely work. And Ariza would make them a very dangerous team with him coming off the bench and playing crunch time minutes as a 3 or 4 with Jimmy Butler and J.J. Redick there. So
that
could be a decent trade. But, I mean, Fultz just definitely needs a new start. And he needs to go somewhere where he can play 30 minutes and just, you know, find his game again.
Make mistakes and not really care about it.
Yeah.
Get him to Cleveland for Korver. And JR.
Can you imagine him and Colin Sexton playing together? Man, that's Brick City right there. You can build an entire city with those two.
Yeah, it'd be perfect. It's exactly what Cleveland's made for.
Ooh. Yeah, I guess they need new infrastructure, so shucks, those two wouldn't be bad bricklayers.
You know who's also full of bricklayers? Is Detroit. What the hell? I don't know how this team is at like 4 games above 500, but I'm pretty sure they just rely on Blake Griffin to do everything for them, and then Andre Drummond to rebound the ball. Because they have zero perimeter play, like consistent perimeter play, And yet somehow they're still winning games. I'm pretty sure Blake is just, you know, a god right now.
Yeah, Blake has been really good thus far. And his off-the-dribble game especially. Like, he's hitting threes off the dribble now.
It makes no sense. Like, remember when Blake couldn't shoot free throws? And his game is just completely expanded now. They basically run all of their offense through him. And on defense, they sort of have a bunch of random guys at the perimeter who can just cover the three. And then if anyone comes inside, you're going to see Blake Griffin and then Andre Drummond just waiting for you in the paint. It's not a bad setup defensively, right?
Yeah, when I watch them, I just think that Andre Drummond's game just hasn't really improved over the last couple of years. Like, he puts up great stats, obviously, but he doesn't really protect the rim at all, and he's not good switching out on players on the perimeter. Like, he should be a much better defensive player at this point, but he really has no impact on defense. And then offensively, he's obviously a beast on the boards, getting second chances and such, and he fits well with Blake, too. Those two have good chemistry. But I think if Detroit wants to look more long-term, like, I think he's the piece that they should probably try to ship out.
Drummond?
Yeah.
What do you think you can get for Drummond, though? Like, what's his... Let me check his salary.
In today's NBA, it's hard to say, because he's more of an old-school type of center that can play defense when he's motivated, but if he's not doing it consistently, he doesn't have the same value as, you know, centers that can really score the ball, like, you know, put up 20-plus points per game or be a Gobert type, or they can just protect the rim at elite level. So he's somewhere stuck in the middle there, and that's not where you want to be.
Yeah, stuck in the middle is correct. He's making 25 a year. 25, 27, and 28 over the next 3 years. I mean, that's a pretty big contract to try to trade. Otto Porter, let's make that move.
Yeah, I mean, he would be a pretty good fit as a lob threat with John Wall, obviously, but there's not a lot of teams that are looking for centers with that level of salary, especially. And just going back to Detroit, they're 11-7 right now, but going back to, you know, talking about the strength of the schedule, they've had the second easiest schedule thus far in the NBA. So they do beat up on, you know, bad teams, but they've been losing the good ones besides that miracle win against Toronto, which I'm still angry about.
I don't think it was a miracle, man. They just showed up. They just wanted it more. It was all for coach. Yeah. They saw
the law of averages in that game just caught up with them. So I don't know.
Man. They saw that video for Casey and were like, oh man, like, how could you do a coach dirty like that?
Yeah, they all of a sudden got motivated in the third quarter. They're like, oh yeah, we're down 19 points, but we have to win this game for Coach Casey.
Yeah, pretty much. And then Reggie Bullock and Stanley Johnson started hitting shots. Said no one ever.
And Kawhi Leonard just started turning the ball over every single possession. That game is not going to happen again. But yeah, I mean, Detroit, they're probably like a fringe playoff team like we all expect them to be. They're going to be like in the 7-9 range, possibly making the playoffs, and just stuck in NBA purgatory, in the NBA treadmill right now, because they have way too many large contracts in the books for players that don't produce at a high level.
It's not even just that, but the work they've done with younger players is so shoddy. They haven't really developed anyone in any recent history. Like, think about their past draft picks. Stanley Johnson, Luke Kennard. Who else is there? Bruce Brown, I guess, is a player. They haven't really done much with their perimeter guys. None of them can really shoot. They're all, like, mediocre defenders, tops. It's highly disappointing because they have so much potential with these guys.
Yeah, I mean, Bullock has been pretty good the last couple of years, but he's not a guy that should be a starter. He should just be like a sharpshooter off the bench type. But again, when you have so much money tied up in your three best players who are, you know, I mean, Blake's probably a top 20 player this year, obviously, but the other two guys are getting paid way too much for what they produce, especially Reggie Jackson.
Yeah, he's wild.
So I think Detroit just has to go in one of two directions. They either trade Drummond and sort of start a slight rebuild, like rebuilding on the fly, or they try to just go all in and trade Reggie Jackson and somebody else for John Wall and just have two of the worst contracts in NBA history on their books.
Yeah, I like that. Reggie Jackson and Stanley Johnson. Let's get John Wall over.
There you go.
Have the craziest mismatch of guys who can't shoot on the team together.
Yeah, and instead of being a 7-9 seed, they can be a for sure 6 seed.
Yeah, I like that. Consistent playoff team for 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, that's fun. That's why so many people show up at the games, right? Arena's half empty every single game at Caesar's Palace or whatever the hell they call that place now.
No, that's only because, you know, Detroit's dead broke as a city. You can't hate on people for that.
And yet they built a new arena last year for some reason.
Yeah, just because the city is broke doesn't mean that the ownership is broke. Come on now. All right, who's our last team?
Oklahoma City.
Ooh, interesting. Go on.
So they're first in defensive efficiency this year, and that's without Andre Robertson.
Wait, what?
They're first in the league in defense thus far this year. That's and they've crazy. Just, they've, like, you're talking about Memphis grinding teams, like, they are really grinding teams right now. And the one area they've improved upon the most is their opponent's 3 points, percentage of points. So last year they were at 32 points given up from the 3-point line. And this year they're at 27. So they're seventh in the NBA right now. So they're finally more teams to the rim now. And they're running teams off the 3-point line despite not really having a full-time shooting guard. So they've done a really good job at that, and obviously Dennis Schroeder has come in and filled in for Russell Westbrook when he's been injured. He's done that pretty well. They stayed around 500 without Westbrook, and now they're obviously in the positives. I think they're 4 or 5 games over 500. And they've hit a pretty easy part of their schedule, obviously, and winning a bunch of these games recently. But I just like their overall look as a team, and I think once they get Robertson back, come playoff time, they're just going to be a really hard team to play against.
When is he supposed to be back? December or January or something?
I think he had a setback, so I think about a month ago they started being like a 3 or 4 month timetable, so sometime in the new year, probably in February or so, and who knows if he comes back as the same player, and if he doesn't, then they got a problem because they are pretty weak on the wing, obviously, still.
Not just the wing, but their depth is pretty shallow. Like, their bench depth, it's pretty, like, off the bench, you have Raymond Felton, Alex Abrines, and what? Patrick Patterson, Hamidou Diallo.
Diallo's been pretty good this year, but he's injured now as well, and Ferguson got injured too. But just having Schroeder really off the bench, though, just on his own. I mean, he plays 30 minutes a game, and he can play in closing lineups, so that's a big boost from what they had last year.
Yeah, I mean, you went from Melo to Schroeder. It's pretty decent.
Yeah, and going back to the Melo effect, I mean, you have Jeremy Grant starting at power forward now, and he was a huge net positive in that Utah series. And I think if they played him more than they played Melo, they would probably have won that series. And now I think that he's been the biggest change with them not having Roberson and being the best defense in the league, just having him playing 30 minutes a game instead of having Melo just being picked on all the time in their starting lineup. I think that makes a huge difference because you can't really pick on anybody besides Westbrook in that starting five.
I can't wait for the Westbrook fans to come at you.
Westbrook's been a bad defensive player the last, 5 years? And yeah, I don't really blame him. He has so much on his shoulders offensively. It's hard to keep that energy up on defense. You got to rest somewhere, right? And he's been doing a lot of resting on defense.
Yeah, it's hard when you purposely chase rebounds that don't belong to you. It's very difficult. You know, hard life. It's relaxed. It's averaging like 20 field goal attempts a game. Come on. You don't need to shoot that much, man. Pass the ball from time to time, you know?
That's not Westbrook's game.
Exactly.
That's like telling a dog not to chase a ball that you just throw in the field.
It's self-induced, though, is what I mean. Like, he's the one who's chasing all these defensive rebounds. You talked about Brook Lopez earlier being a guy who boxes out and lets someone else grab rebounds. That's all Steven Adams does on this team.
And somehow Steven Adams is still averaging a double-double this year, despite Westbrook stealing a lot of his rebounds.
Yeah, because he's a boss. But imagine how much he could be averaging if he wasn't still having his rebound stolen.
Yeah, honestly.
Like 15-15.
And he even actually has an impact on defense, too, unlike Drummond. So Adams is one of the 5 best centers in the NBA right now, I think.
Low key, yeah. Did you see that clip of, who was it? Someone like tried to push him and he just like stood there and be like, what are you doing?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think it was one of the, who was it again?
It was one of the younger bigs.
Was it Aiden?
Aiden or Bagley or somebody like that.
He just didn't even move. You can't move that guy, man. He's just a mountain man. There.
Like, what is this? What are you trying? Do you think this team actually does any damage in the playoffs, though? Because I think they're going to end up being the same team that they're always in the playoffs. Russ is going to go crazy. He's going to get his stats and then break away his shots.
I mean, with the West being more wide open this year, thus far anyway, with no second or third team emerging, outside of Golden State, obviously, is the best team in the West. And the league. I think they have a shot to be the second best team in the West. It's just a matter of, again, going back to what Philadelphia needs to do. They need to get one more wing player. at least one more, either in the buyout market or at the trade deadline. Guys like, you know, maybe Courtney Lee, he's available, obviously. Kent Bazemore, just a guy like that that can just knock down threes and play a little bit of defense in the starting lineup if Roberson's not ready, or come off the bench if Roberson's back in the fold.
You can't separate Kent Bazemore and Vince Carter now. They just started a podcast.
Yeah, that would suck.
Are you going to listen to that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Really?
I think so. And see how the first couple episodes go, and then talking about how it is on the road and everything. That should be interesting.
Did you listen to Road Tripping with Channing Frye and Richard Jefferson?
No, that's just because I don't like RJ.
The show was literally called Road Tripping.
Yeah, I just don't like RJ and how he, you know, talk crap about the Toronto Raptors fans back when New Jersey was playing Toronto in the playoffs.
Still salty, eh?
And that voice of his is just irritating. He has like the, he's got the Reggie Miller voice, the very nasally voice.
Nah, no one's got Reggie's voice.
No, it's pretty close.
Nah, man, I can't believe we started and we're going to end with Reggie Miller. I don't want to end with this. Can you take us to Stats Corner, please?
Yes, yes, I can. So I got two things for you this week. So the first, they're both questions. So it's not going to be just, you know, you trying to figure out.
Not just trivia?
What's that?
Not just trivia?
No, it's going to be trivia, but not in the normal way within the last couple of weeks to where, you know, you have to try to guess who are the five teams, you know, that are best in defensive efficiency or offensive efficiency, whatever. This is only going to be a question relating to one team. And there's two different questions relating to two different teams.
Damn.
So I'll give you three guesses for both. So first question, which team allows the least amount of team opponents' points per game in the paint, but the highest opponent percentage of points from three?
So high three-point percentage, low in the paint.
Yes. They don't allow any paint points, but they allow a ton of threes.
East or West?
They're in the East.
Indy?
You are correct. Oh, Indiana.
Damn. That was good.
So
guess.
They are on one whole end of the spectrum for one thing and allowing you know, a ton of points from the three-point line. But in the paint, they've been really good thus far this year. And that's you know, something that you have to really look at. You know, Miles Turner and Sabonis, they've been doing a really good job in terms of keeping teams out of the paint. And it's their overall scheme and just trying to condense the paint. But at the same time, that's one thing they have to look at, maybe just trying to switch that up a little bit and maybe just leveling off a little bit, because you don't want to be the team that ends up like allowing 14 threes a game either. So
yeah, but they do have the second best defense in the league right now. That's only allowing like 102 points per game.
This is true, but you also have to account for pacing as well, right? So they play at a pretty slow pace, which is why, you know, 102 points a game doesn't mean all that much, but it helps them come playoff time, obviously, if they're able to get off the three-point line.
Coach Nate McMillan, man, thinking the long game here.
This is true. And then this one I think you're probably going to get, but which team scores not only the most fast break points per game this year, but has had the highest jump from last year to this year with 12 more fast break points per game?
Holy shit. Is it the Lakers?
It is not. Good guess. I think they were third.
Chicago?
No, Chicago's actually last in offensive efficiency overall, so it's definitely not them.
Let's see.
Who has been one of the top three surprise teams this year?
Dallas?
Nope, you're close, but no.
Clippers?
Nope.
Oh my god, I'm awful.
Surprise is taking this long.
Can't be San Antonio.
No. San Antonio plays one of the slowest
teams. Oh,
Orlando. Places.
Nope. What the hell? East or West?
West.
Hmm.
Clearly you don't like NBA basketball, Peter.
Oh, Sacramento.
That's correct.
Oh, what a gem.
So they've been the fastest team in the NBA in terms of the fast break points, and they've been much better this year, obviously, in terms of running the break, and they've been a much more watchable team this year on that note.
Well, yeah, with De'Aaron Fox is running the show, it's so fun now. Now that he can actually hit shots, and he knows how to lead the team. You got your boy B. Jelly coming off. Is he still starting or coming off the bench?
He's still starting, but Marvin Bagley's been getting more minutes lately.
Yeah, Bagley's nice, man.
I like him, too. I think eventually he's going to be like a modern type of center. He's playing power forward right now, but because he's a real fan, he's sort of like Chris Bosh in his first year, I think.
Yeah, he'll work his way up to being a center. But he is good. That guy can move.
Yeah, he's quick, and he moves really smoothly, too. And his shot is not that bad thus far. He can't really shoot threes yet, but his mid-range jumper is not that bad, and he's been putting up numbers lately, too, on a winning team. More, I guess they're 500 now, but Sacramento's been a lot better than people thought.
Yo, I have a question. When Sacramento traded Boogie Cousins for Buddy Hield and, like, what, it was Hield in the draft pick, right?
Yeah, I think it was one more player in the draft pick, but now it's just like Buddy Hield, essentially. And I think they got, out of that draft pick, I think they got Bogdanovich out of it, so.
Yeah. We all laughed at them for being, like, you know, really? For Cousins? But Hield is averaging 18.8 points a game. Not too bad.
Yeah, he's been pretty good. And last year he was, I think he was the best spot-up shooter percentage-wise in the NBA, ahead of Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. So he's got that going for him.
Damn. This kid can really shoot now.
He can. And I honestly like Bogdanovich better than him. I think Bogdan is a better player than Hield. I mean, Hield's starting right now, obviously. Bogdan was starting last year. But Hield has made a jump this year. But I think overall in that Sacramento situation, I think they looked at Boogie Cousins, sort of like, you know, the Clippers looked at Blake Griffin and Washington looked at John Wall. Those teams decided to supermax those players, whereas Sacramento said, do we really want to give DeMarcus Cousins 5 years, $200 million? And they went with no, and they got a decent return back now. So it's really hard to give the supermax to a player that's not a top five player in the NBA because it just kills your cap.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. Sacramento's been really good. I think they can actually start both Bogdanovich and Buddy Hield at the same time at the 2-3, right?
Like, yeah, they've been playing in crunch time together because Bogdanovich is a really good playmaker off the dribble, especially in crunch time. So, and they've been a top five league pass team this far this year, I think, too.
Are you a pizza guy? I'm a pizza guy.
What kind of guy is Isaiah Thomas? He's quick, fiery, and determined.
And I'm a pizza guy.
That's why I'm loving the fresh from scratch pizza at Pizza Guys.
Are you a pizza guy? Then get the Pizza Guys.
I'm definitely a pizza guy, and I love NBA basketball. They have the best broadcast team in the NBA.
Oh, by far. Them and Minnesota are my top two.
Yeah.
And Boston, just because Tommy Heinsohn is hilarious.
Yeah, just him yelling at the refs for 2.5 hours.
As long as you don't take him seriously, he's hilarious.
This is true.
All right, that's it. That's all for Stats Corner.
Yeah, that's it. That's all I got for you this
Beautiful.
Week.
Beautiful. I went like 50% on it, I guess.
Maybe I wouldn't even say that. Your first one, I mean, you got Indiana right away, obviously, but I think you guessed every single team in the NBA to get to Sacramento, so we're not going to give you a W for that one. You're taking an L.
It's harsh, man. We should start keeping track of this.
I would say you're probably at a Phoenix level record.
Get out of here. All right, I want to thank everyone for listening. Please remember to rate and subscribe. Find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, all of the major podcast platforms. Hit us up on Twitter and Instagram at Stretch4Pod. And until next time, peace.